random men chasing me down the street.
Big up.
The etiquette of other people in saunas, specifically creepy men in saunas. Poor sauna etiquette in general. Mm.
And this is why we can't have nice things. All of those four things and others to be discussed. Welcome to our second episode of This Is Why We Can't Have Nice Things. This one is lovingly titled Period Shit.
And the backstory of Period Shit.
Yes, exactly. So this was actually the first episode that we discussed and planned and was the incognito origin story of the podcast in general. Basically, we do kind of gather around periodically to discuss, to just have fun and drink wine, mostly.
Periodically?
Nicely played. And one time we were just complaining about our weeks and I was talking about this feeling of like cramps and feeling bloated around my period, and our dear friend Erin here present let me know this happened like a few years ago. I was in my 30s as I learned that there is a thing that happens around your period with your gut bloating and then like your cycle impacting your digestive system that is called period shits. Not only does it happen to everyone and it's not just you having a bloated tummy, we have a term for this. And this prompted a longer discussion about all the things that we don't know but should know about our bodies. Like, why would nobody tell you this? Of all the things that people tell us as we grow up, why would nobody just tell you that this happens to you and will happen to more than half the population of the world every single month? And so this is going to be kind of an episode of talking about other things similar to impact of your cycle, and will be mostly centered around health and well-being and just women's bodies. One of the first questions that I wanted to start with that was always really curious to me was how different countries tackled sexual health and women's health. And I'm happy to start with an example. We got actual classes and teachings about pregnancy. There was somebody that came in to tell us about what would happen if you got pregnant, gave us a card in high school. So that was fun. And I don't think I've met many people as I've moved out west that had that.
Mm-hmm. And the context here is Bulgaria.
Yes.
Yeah, the context here is Bulgaria, yes. Eastern Europe. And yeah, that was fun for me.
So what are we talking here? Like was this like, as I'm assuming it wasn't, when you say it was a class, I'm assuming it wasn't like, it didn't get enough time, like it wasn't like equivalent to like, you know, like language and maths and stuff. And
No. Pregnancy. This was like we occasionally you got somebody to come and talk to you. We had like periods that weren't assigned to a subject.
Sorry, every time we say the word periods, I'm going to be like, hey,
yeah.
No pun intended.
I mean, fair. And yeah, and then there was just a guy that was like, so, and he worked in a private clinic.
Was it a guy?
It was a guy. He worked in a private clinic. But the thing was, but he was like, he dealt with pregnancies before and he was just very much like, so this is what will happen. This is what happens inside your body, inside your uterus. He debunked some myths for us. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, sometimes somebody will tell you if you're pregnant and then you like take a fall and then you like lose your baby. That's not what happens. Mm-hmm. It's not like, oh, you trip and then your baby fell out. That's not. Your body is strong. It's meant to withstand stuff like that. It shouldn't, like, if the baby is healthy, mm-hmm. a fall would not impact. And he was like talking about stuff like that. He gave us a card afterwards, like if something should happen, like, you can speak to somebody. Wow. So
what does that mean, if something should happen?
Like if you get pregnant. And actually, I know a girl that ended up using that same card.
Oh.
You see, if I got pregnant as a teenage girl, I would love to just go and speak to some random guy.
I'm just imagining it's like an episode of The Simpsons. He phoned the number.
Was a doctor.
Like, hey, Dr. Nick. Hey, everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. So, in Bulgaria, 20 years ago, ish, they hadn't quite reached the notion of gender sensitivity.
I still think it was cool. Like somebody actually talked to us about it.
Yeah.
I don't know, Italy in the 90s. I think we had a class that was part of, it was not, I think we were studying about like anatomy in general, that the human body. Mm. And I think they added something about like that, like reproductive system. But I don't have like a lot of memories, but I have memories of something else. Like in my family, you know, discourses around like reproductive system and sexual health, they were not like something we would discuss about. So I remember that at the time, so when I was like in early primary school, I would go to the library with my friends and we found a section that was for like sexual health and sexual reproduction health. And me and my friends, we used to go there and check the books. I think I was like 8 or 9. Mm-hmm. We'd just open the books and, you know, be very giggly because it was like something taboo that we should know about. Yeah. I was like, wow, you know, and look in the books and check things. And I remember that someone found out that actually we were doing that. And so they prohibited us to go to that section of the library.
Wow.
End of someone... I don't know, end of my getting to know these things.
What a great first experience. What a great first response.
Yeah,
seeking to learn something ultimately very natural and essential to your like developmental understanding. No!
Oh, absolutely. It was lovely then to find out from your friends who are your age how actually you have babies. And I still don't know why a 9-year-old would know exactly the intimate details of that. But at the time, I did not know, like, and then that's how I found out. I think it was 9.
Yeah.
So I was very young. Yeah.
I feel sort of similar. Like, this question is interesting because, you know, I know that it's about kind of talking about what was the quality of, like, your sex education. But when I think about, you know, how I came to know the facts of life, mm-hmm. like it was in a sort of staggered and strange way. Like I feel like I picked up bits of information here and there, patchy in nature, and it also makes me think about like there's an anecdote that always stays with me because there was like and maybe you guys can relate, but there was like a girl who was, I don't think in my year, maybe the year above, but there was like a nastiness, kind of like a kind of sniggery nastiness going around because as the rumor went, she was like, I don't know, like 14, and she still thought you could get pregnant from kissing. And that was kind of going around, and everybody was like,
it's kind of sweet,
but it's all, and it's also
sad,
and
sweet.
It's sad, sweet, and indicative of how you know, ill fitting the type of sex education there was. Like when I think about, and it's interesting for me and Emma because we're both Scottish, but enough of an age gap that there might have been a bit of difference.
Oh yeah, a bit too harassed.
So my memory is there was some point in primary school, like maybe like primary 6 or 7, which is like you're what, like 10, 11, maybe that kind of age, and it was the boys had their input. There was they, you know, they were having like a thing. They went to the assembly hall and somebody could talk to them, and then they all got like marched out, and then the girls got marched in to have their separate talk. And that in itself I don't think is a massive problem. I think there is something to be said about at certain ages, like, you know, for girls and boys to have like gender sensitive and separate types of inputs. So I do think we should in addition also have shared inputs as well, because we didn't get any information about the boys. Innards and tubes and functionings, and I really don't think that the boys got instruction on girls' innards and tubes and functionings, but that was very like a kind of dusty old lady nurse with a sort of model cross section of a uterus and ovaries and stuff. And then there was like a banana involved and a condom. Kind of that kind of situation, lots of giggling.
I never got a banana.
I'm pretty sure there was definitely an old lady putting a condom onto something. that happened at some point in my sex education journey as a young person. It might not have been the same meeting. And then there was a whole thing about like how to put on sanitary towels. This was all done in a oneer.
Oh, wow.
One assembly.
So like condoms and sanitary towels.
Same, yeah.
I love like the brevity and the scattered information, because they usually miss out on other important things, which is like consent, you know,
of
being
course.
Treated okay. nicely.
None of that.
You know, it's all about like, how do we get babies?
So there was that input, like I say, end of primary school. And then in secondary school, there was like PSHE, like personal and social health and relation health education. I don't know, it stands for something like that. Mm. And there was a couple of inputs around then when you're a bit older. And then in the context of biology, there's like a module on reproduction that's very much skirted over in the curriculum when I was a young person. And that's it.
Well, I'm gonna add in religion to this.
Oh, amazing.
Discussion, because I was brought up Catholic, so I went to Catholic primary school and secondary school. And I have a bit of a scattered experience. So primary school, I'm pretty sure this was primary school. Yes, it will be. We were all kind of herded into like, I think it was a music room. So it was just like a tiny wee room.
We're going to tell you about this through the medium of music.
Piano chiming in the background. Now we have sanitary towels.
I want to see this musical.
And pretty similar to you, and like the boys were herded off, so that they weren't taught about like science. Oh, yeah, they're not going to have to use them, but nice to know that. Make it like not a scary thing for them to like have to know about or like learn about. We were taught about kind of sanitary products, how to use them, giving some away. And I remember coming home after that and feeling a bit excited about it, because like, oh, I've got this stuff, and I didn't feel kind of shame about it then. But then after that, the shame kind of set in quite quickly and quite deep. And then kind of fast forward to secondary school. Didn't get anything about sex education in primary school. Secondary school, it wasn't like second year in science class. This old TV was wheeled out, squeaking, by the male science teacher. And we were all just kept together, like all genders were present. Like, and then VHS popped in, and it was a bit about the reproductive system, about how women get pregnant. And there was before this, actually. And I don't know that this is just because it was a religious, like, school, Catholic school. It was, like, portraying a story of, like, it was, like, literally a man and woman running in a field together.
No.
Happy. Wind blowing through her hair.
Pollination.
And then they just, like, collapse together in the field. And you don't see it. And then all of a sudden, this is how a baby's made.
In
not
a field.
Ideal. Not a realistic story at all. But... hey ho, that was what was portrayed to us. So that has just been ingrained in my memory of that was my sex education, and thoroughly disappointed with reality.
Yeah.
So I have to. Where's my fucking field?
Wind wasn't blowing through my hair.
Yeah.
I don't look fantastic in long flowy dress.
So I have two follow-ups. One, did you get condoms?
No, because it was a Catholic. Oh, another, the third part of this, fast forward to like third year maybe. Mm-hmm. Ari, talking about sex education again, can't really remember much of it, but it was talking about contraception. Mm-hmm. But they skipped over like the pill and condoms, didn't give like how to use a condom kind of thing. Or
this
showed
is in
it.
The context of religious education.
But they were the Ari teacher. I don't even know if it was part of the... curriculum or if it we're just talking about, I can't remember how. Yeah, it was a long time ago, but like I just remember that it was again a male Ari teacher talking about how him and his wife like had, like, it was a not a deep personal thing, but because they were religious, talking about other ways of reproductive health or like contraception other than using the pill and condoms. It's like,
is it the rhythm method,
cycle syncing, so that like, you know,
I'm
like
sorry,
tracking
the rhythm method.
The women
you
has
know
to track her cycle, and then you can have sex around kind of like different times of the cycle.
Francesca, do you know what the rhythm method is? Is this just like a Scottish only thing?
Well, never reached continental Europe. Yeah.
Well, you say is it a Scottish thing? Billy Connolly famously talked about it in his like in some stand-up comedy show. and was very critical of the Catholic Church and the advice around. Yeah.
So is the rhythm method like the rhythm section?
Oh, in... please guess.
This is fun.
This is why we get taken to the music room.
You just like
percussion, please.
Is it just like you have sex to a certain beat, and then you get pregnant?
You have sex on a drum kit.
Sure.
It's like the other version of like the field. Yes.
Those are your options.
Oh, yeah. So, okay.
If you have sex in a field, you get pregnant. If you have sex on a drum kit, you won't get pregnant.
It's all fine. Don't worry about it. What is the rhythm section?
Not sure either.
It's basically like having sex in a way that's controlled so that you can kind of predict ejaculation and then pull out.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like
the pull-out method.
Oh, right.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, but we cannot call it that way in the 90s.
I don't know why. Maybe it's just different lingo for the same thing. Yeah. But yeah, the idea is that you kind of hold like a regular rhythm such that you can predict and then pull out.
Not getting too excited and like not going, like it just like...
And they were teaching this to the girls. Yes, I shall contract my uterus. Away. The does not accept sperm at this time. Please call back tomorrow.
Gates are closed. Come back. Yeah.
You know what, actually?
You're barred. I told you never to come round here again.
This conversation. Well, not this very last conversation, but the one about condom reminds me of this advertisement. I'm not sure if I mentioned that to you, Erin.
Sure.
When we last met, but basically in Italy, we had this series of advertisements like on TV, which were called like progress advertisements. So they were just touching on, you know, themes that were considered progressive by Italy in the 90s. And one of them was about the use of condom. Mm. And I generally do not remember the association or what else. I wonder if it was connected to the campaign, you know, to inform people about AIDS and safe sex and whatever. And basically the advertisement goes that there is like a class full of students who are, I don't know, I think in secondary school, late secondary school, right? And there is this professor who finds like a condom on his desk. And then he picks up the condom and he was just like, whose condom is this? And then there is like a guy who just like, it's mine. And he stands up. And then another person's like, it's mine. And the other person stands up. And then everyone stands up in the class. And I'm saying this and I'm laughing because at the time I was too young when this like advertisement was broadcast on TV. I clearly had no understanding. I was like, yes, a condom, I did not understand the concept of condom. I did not understand the concept of sex. But then, like, the advertisement was so fun for us that me and my friends, we kept to say, what's this? We would pick up a pen, a book. We're just like, it's mine. And then I remember once my parents were like, oh my God, like, what's happening here? I think they were like, they understood that we were like mimicking the advertisement without understanding. Mm-hmm. What was that all about?
Yeah.
But it was so fun. And, you know, I will find it on YouTube and we will add it in the description of this episode.
Oh, yeah. Put a link.
Yeah. It was really great. Like if there is one thing that I remember from the 90s, maybe it was like late 80s. I don't know. But it was just like, I'll show you later.
I never got given condoms at school in the context of school. But when I was like, so... Earlier, pre-recording, we were talking a little bit about some like personal anecdotes of just in the general theme of sexual health. And so my mum's a nurse, and there was a point in my sort of like, I don't know, maybe like 12 or something. I like came home from school or something, and I remember like my mum was like, I've left some books in your room that it would be good for you to read. Ominous. And it was like a stack of three sort of like aimed at, I guess, my age group, sort of like sexual health, like your body's changing, da 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 da. You might be feeling things about people.
This is a willy.
Yeah, you might be having funny feelings down in your knickers, that kind of shit. And I sometimes think back to that and go, what did I do? What in my behaviour? What did my mum find out about me? But she was like,
"What did you do?"
I don't know. That's what I'm scared about. Was there something she picked up on that she was like, "I think maybe I need to like educate her about something." I don't know. So there was that, and then there was like also like there was a lot of like wordless communication about kind of sexual health in my house, kind of growing up. So back to the condom thing, like I had a boyfriend. It was knowledge that I had a boyfriend, and I remember coming home from school one day and coming into my room, and on my desk there was like a massive brown bag, like massive, like this big, just like a paper bag. Like
Erin has put her hands as far apart as you can imagine. It's a big bag.
Imagine like it kind of looked almost like a chippy. Do you know what I mean? Like a big bag of chips, like that big. And I was like, what is this? And it was just like this huge bag of condoms that my mum had just like brought back from work and just like wordlessly left in my room, like, please don't get a disease. Please don't get knocked up. But there was never a verbal acknowledgement of it. These condoms just manifested in my room. It's quite cool. I wish that would happen in adulthood. Just like, oh, some condoms have manifested.
I will say, I thought it was cool. So the
sexual health theory has been.
I always thought like the one thing that I thought was useful that didn't happen to me, but I know that it happened to my brother, was his school made the boys go out and buy condoms. That was like an assignment. Which I thought was nice, because I find even as grown-ups, men are like,
what are condoms anyway? I've
really?
Never seen a condom.
Men be like that.
Yeah.
I've not had that experience with
every single man that I've met in my life has been like, I don't know what a condom is. I've never seen one in the wild.
Same experience.
Yeah.
Exactly same experience.
So they have kind of inbuilt shame around that, like we are taught to have around buying period products or even showing them on your person.
Is it that it doesn't matter as much to them because they're not the ones who have to.
I think it's a shame because you buy it in a store and people see you buy it and everyone is looking at you and being like, this person's gonna have sex, and then they imagine you having sex, and that's shameful.
Yeah, but you buy period products and then people imagine you're bleeding vagina.
What a gift to the people listening.
As it was coming out of my mouth, I was like, don't say this.
I had to censor myself on the sexual health theory.
The question mark is like, we can always edit. Let's see if the audience will be gifted.
But no, I thought that was actually useful because it was like, it wasn't just, here's a condom, you need to use this. It was more like, we're going to teach you how to buy some. And have responsibility. And I thought that was nice.
Yeah, get you over the
like the phobia. Do it once so that you're not like, oh my god, like you go out and buy some.
It's interesting that all of these talks, and then I'm thinking that I wish, you know, that someone came to me, and not necessarily about like sexual health, but about like periods, would be like, oh, you know, if you're very unlucky, it's gonna feel like, you know, you're going to be nauseous all the time.
Yeah.
You're going to feel like you actually want to go to the toilet, but nothing is coming out.
You know?
Or like, oh, you're going to have cramps that are very debilitating and you cannot do anything with it. Or, you know what I mean? Like, other conversations that sometimes are completely missed.
Yeah.
From the things. And I had so many, like, hormones problems that basically my period has been skippy, if we want. To give it this definition, so many times, because I didn't have like a adult long experience of periods, I had to text my family, because luckily I have two sisters and my mom, and I would be like, is this normal? And then I would send them symptoms, and then one of them would be like, oh yeah, that's what happens to me, it's fine, you're gonna be survive.
That is the thing, like I think we can all unite around like a poverty of that kind of information around like menstrual health and that part of like reproductive health. Like I never got any of that. And like coming back to the opener that Mira was talking about, the way that we figure this out as women, at least our generation of women, maybe it's changing for young women today with the internet, I don't know, but you sort of find out about this in communities of women.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
But also some of that, I think, made different for you because you were asking people, you know, asking women in your family.
Mm-hmm.
Some of my anecdotes maybe make it clear that there wasn't much direct talking about it in my family. Mm-hmm. So I don't think I've ever really talked to my mum about reproductive health, really, other than times being a teenager where she's like, are you pregnant? Like, I don't think that counts. But there's also the thing where, like, because, like, we've been friends for a very long time,
mm-hmm.
and it was only in the past couple of years that, you yeah. know, we kind of talked openly about that. Because it comes with maturity a little bit, the destigmatizing mm. of it.
I think it's, well, this was going to be my next thing, is just, like, I think I've also been very lucky with my friends, because when I was in high school, other than, like, actually getting some teachers that were willing to answer questions, like, we had... In one of our biology classes, we basically took the teacher hostage and we were like, we have questions about sex. Will you answer them?
Oh, wow.
And she gave the deepest sigh in the world and she was like, yeah, whatever, fire them on. And they were the most disgusting, like, overt. What if the penis goes into this place? What will happen then? And she was like, I guess this, like, whatever.
Mm. What's the place? What place? Is it bum? Is it urethra?
There was something, I'm struggling to remember what the exact question was.
Because there aren't any other places.
A year hole, I don't know.
What if it accidentally goes in my ear?
What if I'm having sex on my period? What if I'm having sex on my period and I have a tampon? Do I need to take the stuff like that? Yeah.
Yeah, fair enough.
But
yeah.
the other thing was that I was very lucky in that all of my school female friends were very open about talking about bodies.
Mm-hmm.
So did you poop today? I pooped. That's I haven't crazy. Pooped yet. And then they were talking about, like, because all of my friends, I hadn't had sex, like, through high school, but most of my friends had. And so I never talked to my parents about sex. But all of my friends were like, oh yeah, we did, like, this position last night and it really hurt. I'm like, oh, okay, so I'll remember that for future, that, like, that position really hurts.
I would talk about sex with people, but not bowel movements or periods. I would be more comfortable pain. Talking about
yeah
sex.
We talked about everything. It was literally just like bowel movements, pains, pee, everything.
I wish I had that, because again, growing up Catholic, like, it was taboo. It was, like, really shameful, and, like, that was solidified at home as well. Mm-hmm. Like, my parents didn't talk about sex. My mum gave me basic thing on periods, but not much. Mm-hmm. Like, I guess she wasn't given the information growing up, this is what you do for your daughter. It's just, like, I guess there's a reliance on school to do it, maybe. Mm-hmm. Which I'm like, it's a bit of a cop out, because, well, you heard what happens at school, what happened to me. But yeah, like, even, like, sex in particular, that was not talked about, and it was, like, kind of, like, shameful to bring it up. So that, like, really kind of had an impact on me until I was kind of, like, into my adulthood.
Mm. What I would say, like a caveat to what I said before, is that, like, that I would much more readily talk about sex openly with people than I would about, like, bowel movements or periods and stuff. Not in a positive way, though. Not in a way that felt healthy, though. It felt like it was part of that, you know, kind of pressure that exists for young people around sex and relationships, that's, you know, there is this pressure to be doing it and you know, so that you're not a prude or you're not this or that. So it's kind of a status thing, kind of a cool thing, and being open about it was kind of part of that. So there's something that felt kind of socially coerced about it. It's not that it was just like, because when you talk about it, it sounds healthy. For me, it wasn't healthy. It was like, you know, there was kind of open talk of it, but yeah, it was part of that kind of...
That did happen at my school. It was
problematic kind of culture around sex and gender and stuff.
So having to prove yourself, having to prove that you're part of the gang now, kind of thing.
Yeah.
The other way around in my school.
Right.
Actually, I remember in my class when my class, we were only women. And I remember, like, when the first couple of people started having sex, like, they were very much shamed, I think, at the time. Yeah. They were making, like, a lot of, like, comments about that. And then when the majority of people had sex by the end of, like, secondary school, so, which in Italy you finish at the age of 19, in the year you are 19, Then, of course, the narrative changed and shifted. But it was, for me, it was only when I attended university that then I can have like open conversations about bowel movements and periods and sex. And, you know, and actually there is a thing with some friends I have, like when we have our period and we have to make a big decision, we always remind each other, like, have you bled yet? Because you need to wait until after you bleed. And then you can take, like, you can make good decisions for yourself. Not before that. And we always remind each other. And that's very good. And then also when I have, like, clients who menstruate, I always ask them when they're feeling particularly funny. I always ask them, like, have you had, are you around your period? Are you menstruating? And then, and now they know. So they come to me just like, oh, I had the worst couple of weeks. I had my period, type of thing, right? Like, so it now becomes like part of the way that I counsel people who menstruate. So like I try to make it very much because I've had so many problems with my period that I just like, I wish someone would like sit with me and be like, we need to talk more openly about what's going on, which I had in many, for many different reasons, like throughout my life, but I didn't have around other things. They were more peculiar to me. So,
yeah.
So remember, don't make decisions before you're bleeding. Wait.
Wait until after.
More
complicated for those of us who don't bleed regularly, though. My period is almost just like a surprise. It's just like an unexpected visitor. I'm like, why? Why? And then it shows up and I'm like, really? I thought we were done.
Oh, it goes away and then it comes back again?
Yeah, I don't
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I have very irregular periods.
So it's very difficult for you to make a decision, like to...
Ever. I wouldn't know reliably, I'm like, whether or not some sort of like hormonal cycle was like impacting, because I don't have the... I mean, if I was to scrutinize it, I might notice like hormonal patterns without bleeding, but you know what I mean? Like if you, if you don't bleed, it's hard to like get a sense of... So and that was like it was the contraceptive implant. I had the contraceptive implant for a long time, and there's been times where I've had contraceptive implant and it's completely stopped my periods. And then, but then since not having it, like it's just always been a bit on and off. And I had an eating disorder for a long time when I was younger. Fucked up, you know. Like whenever I get a period, I always feel a bit like, I guess I've got
organs.
I've got reproductive organs.
Are there, and there's a lot of miscommunication about like what your period is like and what mood it puts you in. Are there any weird, like crazy myths that you've had about like women's bodies around periods and stuff? So like the cranberry juice thing, cranberries can stop you from getting, can cure UTIs, which, or shaving makes your hair grow back thicker and darker.
That's one of those things that I know isn't true, but nevertheless.
It's like...
Seems to be true.
Yeah.
It's like superstition, right?
No, but I'm saying like,
it could be true, but I'm not going to, you know, it doesn't sound like true, but I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to test.
Well, it's definitely not true. It's been, like, proved to not be true.
Oh, I see.
But nevertheless, like, when I shave, it feels like my hair grows back jaggy and thicker. Like, it feels thicker. But it's, I don't know. You're all looking at me as if, like, are you a werewolf?
Well, no.
I stopped shaving.
Well, there we go. Okay.
I shave very, very sporadically.
I shave all the time.
Yeah, I'm
shaving right now. I'm not shaving right now.
I was like, how are you doing that? I cannot see anything. Wow.
I was playing into the fact that this is an audio experience for most people. I thought it might be funny to inject the image of just all of us sitting around and I'm just like violently shaving my face in public.
I mean, yeah.
I've got one. Is it actually one or is it just... You tell yours first and then I'll decide.
So mine was the thing that I was continuously told as I was growing up, that whatever is wrong with you in your life, physically, mentally, emotionally, love-wise, career-wise, if you get pregnant,
That will get solved. Pregnancy will solve your tummy ache. It will solve your skin concerns. It will solve your mood concerns. It will solve whatever your irregularities you have in your period. If you're feeling sore, if you have painful PMS, everything will get resolved once you have
gunshot wound.
Gunshot wound. Also, you don't enjoy sex. That will get resolved if you have a baby. Magically, I don't.
I've heard that one. Sorry, because I've heard that for endometriosis.
For endometriosis?
That's a cure for endometriosis.
For everything. It's a cure for everything. Yeah, if you have anything that could possibly be wrong with you will get resolved if you have a baby.
But ironically, if you have endometriosis, it's more difficult to get pregnant.
But apparently solves it.
So apparently
you just have to insist. that's basically, you know, anything for having a baby, even like going against what your body's asking you to do. That's the message that
definitely. Yeah, I've heard that as well. Also, just being on contraception, there's a lot of like, you know, just go on the pill and that'll solve this problem.
So I once went to a doctor who was a gynecologist, and she was meant to be checking different parts of my body. I was like 16 at this point. You know, being a gynecologist, she was meant to be looking further south. But during the examination, looking at the fact that I was pimply and had really bad acne at the time, was like, are you doing anything for your face? You know, I could put you on the pill. And I didn't want to go on the pill because I wasn't having sex yet, and I didn't. Like, why? I don't care. Whatever. Maybe. This is weird. Why are you meant to be looking at other parts of me? And then I went to somebody to check my breasts because I have lumpy breasts. And and then this person, this doctor who was checking my breasts, kept touching my breast, then looking at my face and being like, are you doing something about your face? You know, we could like prescribe you the pill. And I'm like, why is everyone obsessed with my acne? Just like, this is so.
But that's exactly what you want as a teenage girl.
It's just like, there's something wrong with your face, like, by the way.
Highlighting a general point of insecurity for teenage girls.
Yeah, because you know, if you don't fix your face, nobody's going to have sex with you, and then you're not going to get pregnant, and then all of your problems in the world aren't going to get fixed by the pregnancy.
The miracle cure.
God.
But
the pill is a thing as well. Like, I went on the pill and, like, I loved it at first because I hated having a period. I hated, hated having a period. And I would, like, run packs together because I'm just, like, I can't deal with it, like, having a period. It just really stressed me out. But then I come off the pill, like, kind of, like, 29. So I've been on it for about 10 years. And the difference it made to my body, I felt human again. I didn't realise how much of an impact it had on me. It just, like, it felt like a breath of fresh air not being on it. I felt like, oh, this is who I am. I actually am. Yeah. Like, I'm, like, getting to know myself for the first time in 10 years. Like, it just, like, nobody tells you about the impact of, like, taking the pill or other kind of types of kind of hormonal contraception, like, how it impacts you. And I know it impacts people in different ways, but there's a, sometimes there's a commonality between it all.
It's like contraceptions, you know, there's so much, you know, burdening of women in lots of different ways with the role that contraception plays. You know, there's the burdening of, you know, within relationships. Where it's like, okay, well, the woman has to deal with the reproductive responsibility. And I know that there's a good argument for
Not trusting men,
yes. But there should be options, you know, for example, like with entrusting, like, interpersonal relationships, there should be an option that the male, if it's a heteronormative relationship, that the male partner, you know, should be able to take responsibility. There should be an option for that. But then the other burdening is just, like, kind of the implicit message of what we've just been talking about, where it's, you know, the burdening of medicine. Like, this sort of, like, scapegoating of, like, women's reproductive systems, that it can just be, like, ailments, difficulties and problems are just written off as, like, this is just a normal experience for you that you shouldn't be questioning. It come, you know, it's that kind of thing of, like, the idea that pain is just something that's essential to the experience of being a woman. Well, yeah, it's painful and uncomfortable and distressing, and that's just, there's nothing that can be done about that. That's just how We're not going to help you with it. It's seen as like this kind of like essential part of being a female sexed person, quote unquote. You know, that's really frustrating. You know, because it does. Like we as a quad of people, like, have had so many conversations about, you know, how just being in a female body creates so many obstacles to getting like appropriate medical responses to like embodied difficulties.
Yeah.
Oh God, yeah. I have so many, but I'm also thinking about, like, I was at the gym the other day, and I think like there was, well, I think I was there. There was like this guy who was complaining about like the state of NHS these days and the fact that he went in and he couldn't be diagnosed immediately with something and given something. And then I dared to say, try to be a woman. He was so like confused and a bit taken aback that I made that comment. And then I went, and then almost like, oh my God, what are we talking about right now? And then I was like, well, imagine being like an immigrant woman in this country and try to come up like that actually you have problems. And then they put it back to you as if like you're not explaining yourself well, you know, so they basically blame on you, like the lack of clarity. And then on top of that, you're a woman, so you don't get things. Like, well, this person was so confused that basically my conversation was shut down immediately. And then actually at the gym, I just wanted to have an opportunity to remind men that we have it more difficult. There are more barriers. Actually, I just want to bring an anecdote.
How do you call it?
Anecdote. I was like, the accent is somewhere in there. Talking about clarity being an English. They were right.
I was like, talk about my uritis.
Basically, the first time that I went to a GP here in Glasgow. So we're talking about 2016. And I've had like hormonal problems since a very, very young age. So basically I was trying to inform my new GP of everything that was going on with me. Also coming from, you know, being under the care of like NHS in Edinburgh. So it wasn't necessarily new, but because NHS doesn't talk to one another. Anyway, so I basically told him something about like, I think at the time I was on the pill, on the contraceptive pill. Because they were trying everything, so why not even the pill, right? And I was like, okay, sure. And I think I was trying to tell the guy, like, I'm really struggling on the pill. Like, I'm going, you know, crazy with it. And then the guy dared to say, well, you are a woman. Of course you are moody. And then he started laughing. And then I looked at him and was just like, I'm actually not laughing. It was like, oh, come on, that was funny. And I was like, no, that was not funny at all.
Nope.
And then I left basically the office.
Of course, it's not funny. I'm a woman and I'm moody and I don't find it funny. Exactly. Yeah.
And then, and so when I left that room and then I went to the reception because I was asked to get another appointment. Well, no, I wasn't even asked to get another appointment. I think I left and I was like, I want to see somebody else. And then they were like, why? I was like, well, this guy was sexist. Of course, no one took note of that. And then they were like, oh, okay, we're going to give you somebody else. And then the other person was a woman who was I'm not sure, like dismissive is the least of the things that I could say. And then she almost like tried to tell me that she knew more than me about my own cycle, which I was like, no, I think you don't know. She tried to change. I don't know what she tried to do at the time. And then I was not happy. So I went back and I was like, I actually need someone new. And then in the mix of all of this, I actually had tonsillitis. So basically I had to go to the out of hours. Then when I came back, I had to see like a doctor because the out of hours didn't provide me with all the medication in the moment. They just gave me up for that night. Mm-hmm. And then they were in the Monday morning. And I was like, well, you need to see your doctor to give you more. I went there. Anyway, I saw 4 people in a period of time of like, I don't know, like 2-3 weeks. And then when I went there, the receptionist had like the cheek to look at me and be like, oh, you moved among like so many doctors, as if like it was my problem. That actually, you know, I had to change so many people all the time. And I was like, how are we twisting the conversation here? you know, around this. And then eventually, consider that I've been dealing with this for a very long time, just to give you like a summary. But on the day of like, we were going to talk about health and women, I have plenty of stories. Mm-hmm. But then fast forward this and consider like I've been enduring this for quite some time from different doctors. Ultimately, like one doctor decided that I needed counseling to deal with like the stress that I was not able to actually manage what was going on in my life.
To deal with your moods because you're a woman.
To deal with my mood. No, yeah, I think it was somewhere like on an official letter that was never forwarded to me. And then I exploded and I was like, you know, exercising power over me with all of your decisions. And then you're saying that my reactions to how you're doing it is basically problematic. Mm. And I need to see a counselor to deal with this. How am I able to deal with like, you know, sexism and misogyny and basically like you dismissing my own experience with that.
Which is really frustrating, like the way that counseling and psychotherapy is wielded like that.
Almost like they're going to fix you.
In statutory context where it's like the poor organisation and mismanagement of statutory services or the under-resourcing of statutory services and the other ways that it's like, kind of like causes harm in the way that it's dispensed. Mm-hmm. There's this sort of like wielding of like and now go away to counselling to deal with the really difficult, unhelpful feelings that have come as a result of you trying to get a health issue resolved. It's so lacking in accountability. And I really, really hate that. I hate that that the practice of therapy is like systemically like used as a tool in that wider system. It like makes me so angry.
Yeah, they want to make you compliant.
Yes, exactly. Right. Yeah.
To what's going on.
But specifically to use counselling to do that is just like, you know, this thing that is like, you know, compassionate in nature and has this sort of like identity that is sedating and, you know, has a way of like neutralising righteous frustration in the face of, you know, what is ultimately oppression.
It hoodwinks
people, you know.
It looks
compassionate, but it's not.
Yeah.
Because it says that there's something wrong with you, you need to go and get fixed. But actually, my view of counselling is it's like something's happened to you. Yeah. We need to help you explore this, process it in some way, but it's not that something's wrong with you that you need to fix. But it's used in that way in other contexts.
Get it fixed by a woman. Because the counselling profession is run mainly by women, right? Like, so of course a woman will look after you and make sure that you actually comply with the system.
Go speak to mummy. Go complain to mother.
One of the things that I was reading that I'm very annoyed by in general, but then I was reading this, I was reading stuff to do with today and seeing it confirmed everywhere, like, just really annoys me. In every official article that I've seen about myths about the human body, about female bodies, there's this thing about pap smears that is being put forth as a myth officially. I'm like, that's not a fucking myth, and don't you dare confirm it. So it's the thing that pap smears shouldn't hurt. Pap smears don't hurt.
I
have plenty of stories.
Like every single article.
Immediate outrage.
co-written by doctors. I've not been able to find a single source. It's like official articles, all doctors like pap smears don't hurt, and I'm like, oh, hold on a minute. Really?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I'll pap smear a doctor with this microphone right now.
Do rectal smears and tests and probes hurt? Probably. It's not a much bigger, thing to shove things through. What planet on?
So we all like. I know that I have like a really awful experience of like medical misogyny and trauma that as long. We probably, like, I kind of feel like it, like, I might regale mine for another episode that's maybe, like, on a slightly different subject, but absolutely. Yeah. There's, and it is misogyny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's the whole, I can imagine a benevolent, what's the word?
Like a benign
motivation.
Yeah.
I can imagine a benevolent motivation for saying that, that comes from the place that we want women to get pap smears. And so we're going to tell them that it doesn't hurt so that you go and get one, because we want to prevent HPV and we want to prevent blah, 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 blah. And so it's good for you. So we're going to tell you that it doesn't hurt. I can imagine that. And yet, wouldn't it be better if you just say that it hurts and then you do something to help us get through it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because this thing happens. Like, I would literally put money on all of us having experienced this, mm-hmm. where you're having a smear test and it's hurting and you get blamed.
Yeah.
Oh my God, yeah.
You get blamed.
Why aren't you relaxing?
You get blamed on.
Yeah.
You get blamed for it hurting because you're not relaxed enough.
Yeah.
As a stranger inserts a metal probe into an orifice of your body.
We should actually add a link.
I'm so relaxed right now.
The speculum. Oh, yeah. So actually people have a sense of what it looks like.
Also, I mean, most of our listeners will be women. So, or, you know, people.
I mean,
smears, so.
A thing of kind of consent in that as well. Because I had an experience where I had, usually all my smears have been lying on a bed. Mm-hmm. But this time it was in like a
not in a field or...
Not in a field.
On a drum kit.
On a piano. Not legs are in stirrups in a chair.
Yeah.
And this is brand new to me. But it was a male doctor as well. And there was
you in a chair, so you're facing
I'm there.
Him.
Like everything exposed. Everything exposed. Right there. And it's I'm supposed to feel better because there's a female nurse standing next to me, but
a spectator.
She was
it's a spectator.
She was kind of
eating popcorn.
Complicit in my trauma in it because I winced when he fucking rammed it in me. No care of being like concerned or gentle or just like being cautious. Rammed it in. I jumped out the seat and I'm like, no, that's sore, because I was having issues as well. I was there for a reason. The female nurse pushed me back down into the seat and forced me back into the seat. And in the moment, I'm like, I have to get this. I just want it over with. I just want it over with so I can get out here. And it's that way of like, it kind of like overrodes my kind of like autonomy and like, I have a choice in what I do here. I don't want to do this, but it's like, I need to comply right now because the other option of the choice, it didn't feel like it was there. And it felt as it was taken away from me. And it was the most horrible thing I've ever experienced. And that's probably nothing near that what other people have experienced, but it's,
oh, that's horrible.
It's truly horrible that should happen. But it is, it's like in these medical spaces, and it feels particularly difficult when it's a woman involved. But it is, it's like the sort of like this like objectifying of the female body, of like, this is like a medical procedure.
I will say it's very Handmaid's Tale.
Very
Well, yeah, it's very, I'm just holding you down for your own good.
You just need to grin and bear it.
So let's give tips, right? Like, so you can, before starting, you can ask for a chaperone, right?
Yeah.
You can negotiate, you know, how you're going to say no and stop, right? You can have these conversations before it starts, you know, and you have all the rights to say that you don't want to continue.
This is great.
Right. Mm-hmm. Like,
we could have a smear test buddy system.
Hashtag pop pals. I think this can become viral. It's such a good idea.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, but it's important to say that. Like, you know, you can negotiate all of the things before they even start, because what happened to me, not as traumatic as yours, but I'm not even sure what was going on in the mind of the female doctor who did the test to me. She took this, I think it's called speculum.
Speculum,
I know my terms. I know fuck all about the world, but I know about these things. And basically she was like, she tried, and I was like, well, actually, that's very horrible. And she was like, yeah, just, you're not relaxing.
Relax.
And I was like, how am I fucking
this
supposed to relax?
This is a very relaxing experience, Francesca.
That's like, exactly.
Look at the and clinical white walls.
I feel like I'm on a beach right now.
You know, and they're going to these exams, you know, I'm very excited because it's like, I'm doing something for myself. I want to get it checked. You know, I don't go in with any, you know, like negative feelings around these tests, right? Like I'm always the one who tells my female friends, like, oh, you should totally go. I can come with you. Mm. You know, we can do it together. I can take, you know, time off to do that. But anyway, I went there, like, so this was happening. It was very hurtful. And I was like, no, I don't think I can continue. I'm laughing because I had rights to say that actually that was her. She was like, oh, I'm gonna try a smaller size. I was like,
there's a smaller size?
There are sizes, yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then I was just like, yeah, yes.
This has happened to me every single time.
Yes.
Like, I
don't
do
know why,
size.
But looking at me, she thought that I was a fucking large. And I was like, yeah. No. She tried the smallest one. And then I was like,
yeah.
Now it's okay. It's not pleasant.
Yeah.
But it's bearable. You know what I mean? Like, I don't have to force myself into relaxing.
I've needed to get the smallest size every single time.
Yeah, and so now I ask, no, but that's not over. So this happened with this woman and with this woman doctor. And then I was just like, okay. And then when I had my pap test again or an other test I needed done when I needed a spec or whatever, I was like, oh, just so you know, I need you to use like a small size. And then the person was like, we always start with the smallest. And then I was like, so gaslighted.
Bullshit.
Gaslighted. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, well, that's not my experience. And when I saw this person using like the smallest speculum, I was like, oh, that's the size. That was not the size that was offered to me that one time. Mm-hmm. You know, so also another tip, just ask to go with the smallest size first.
Yeah.
You know, like I think that's important for people listening. If you're going for a smear test, ask for the smallest size first. You know, it's best to size up.
This is excellent advice.
Yeah. We can tap them down in the description.
Exactly.
All of these, like,
great, great idea.
Yeah.
Did you know why the speculum was made?
Oh, no. You have
is this getting into the quiz part?
I did. No. This was just something that I read last night whenever I was preparing. It was so the doctors didn't want to touch women, and then it got used more and more and more with, like...
Wait, so the alternative is just, like, someone's arm inside
Yeah.
You?
Just like somebody sorting their hands in their
face. Because you don't get to choose how big your hand is.
Yeah.
It's not like, I've changed my hand. We'll start with a tiny doctor and then size up.
Just like, it's like a circus clown car, they just all come rolling out.
Deep number five. Yeah,
go go gadget, go. Let me extend my
go
arm.
Go gadget speculum arm.
I think they've changed the speculum recently. I think the last time that I had the test done, someone told me, "Oh yeah, we just slightly changed something so we could get more stuff."
Yeah.
Clearly, I know the name speculum, but I don't know what they're doing with it.
I've had a great idea.
You
I think we should have an episode where we bring my mum on.
Yes.
And we basically like have like a sex ed class.
Oh, yeah.
With my mum, and she'll like talk about like smear tests and how everything works and give people advice. And
Add on to tips.
Yes. And then you get to meet my mum.
Yeah, exactly. For the audience, I've been trying to meet Erin's mum.
Yeah, we figured out that our friendship is just a stepping stone so that Francesca can have a friendship with her or true love, my mum.
Absolutely.
True platonic friend love.
It's out in the open, so I'm okay with it.
Excellent. So we're ready for the quiz part.
Yeah.
Woo! Woo! So today's quiz is going to be matching with the topic, which is just going to be like mostly about women's health and women's bodies and misconceptions about women. And we're going to start about menopause.
Oh, I'm prepared, actually.
Good. So first question is, which of the following symptoms are a symptom of menopause?
Aren't or are?
Are.
Okay.
Which are? Is it nausea,
memory loss, joint aches, or increase in allergies?
Increase in allergies.
All of them.
Yeah, I would say all of them. For sure, memory loss and joint ache are two symptoms of that.
I would think. Wait, which are or aren't?
Which are.
Oh, probably all of them then.
All of them. Nice. I was really surprised by the allergies.
Not nice, terrible.
Well, horrible, evil. Yes, but well done.
Well done.
But yeah, I was very surprised by the allergies. Mm-hmm. That was like, what? It seems so random.
I'm actually, well, this might be, this is for another podcast, but like that's been on my mind more about menopause and like the symptoms or perimenopause. And like,
yeah.
I have sensitive skin and that has been getting a bit worse recently.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like...
Mm-hmm.
Is it a
linking things together? And like, so I'm on that road to menopause is just round the corner.
Wait, hang on. Are you thinking that you're perimenopausal? I've had
suspicions.
I am the one. I'm probably just around the corner as well.
You're the child.
You're young.
You're the little virgin.
So she and her.
We are
she
same
and
age.
Her. And you.
What do you mean exactly? I'm gonna be offended. This will be edited out.
You're
that's the end of our friendship live.
That's okay, I'm gonna introduce you to my mum soon anyway. No, I was counting you out because of your
you, I have a different
your,
story.
Your
yeah, yeah,
hormonal
yeah, yeah, yeah,
yeah. history. That wasn't supposed to be a tiny little and we've got Grandma Francesca.
But if I look so young.
All right, question number two. Which of the following people said that women's uteruses float in their bodies? Was it?
Yes, God. Correct. Was it Plato? That was the right response.
Okay. Was it Plato? Was it Archimedes, Aristotle, or Derrida?
Aristotle.
Wait, I need to think who they are first.
Right.
And then make up my mind. I don't know the last person.
Derrida.
But what is the first one?
The first one was Plato.
Yes.
Plato, Archimedes, Aristotle, or Derrida said that women's uteruses float in their bodies.
Oh my God, Archimedes. I think for some reasons he figures something else with his something out with his stuff.
I'm voting Aristotle.
The third one.
See,
I'm just saying the number. I don't even care who said it.
All of the above? I mean, I'm sure that all of them said something similar. The right answer is Plato.
No!
Oh, well.
Plato had the theory of the wandering womb.
Was it Plato?
Yeah. Oh. And he included it in his book Timaeus, where he states, the animal within them is desirous of procreating children. And when remaining unfruitful long beyond its proper time, gets discontented and angry and wandering in every direction through their body, closes up the passages of the breath, and by obstructing respiration, drives them to extremity, causing all varieties of disease.
I mean, this clearly proves that misogyny started a long time ago.
Yeah.
Like men are trying to have a say in on women's body. Like, you know, this is like clearly...
Well, the reason I went with Aristotle...
It's like a balloon in your body.
Well, the reason I went with Aristotle is because Aristotle is, of the like ancient philosophers, one of the more famously misogynistic.
Mm. Ah, oh wow. Also, there is like, I don't know, a chart?
We could make one.
Okay.
I'm happy to.
I would love to see that.
So there is a book called A Brief Discourse of a Disease Called the Suffocation of the Mother, which has a very interesting history, and it talks about hysteria, and it links into the wandering womb, which calls women to be very hysterical. And it's one of the primary sources of the study of hysteria in women. And this is written by Sigmund Freud, Edward Jordan, Ivan Pavlov, or G. Stanley Hall.
I don't know who three of those. Read them again. I know, obviously, everyone knows who Freud is.
Freud, Edward Jordan, Ivan Pavlov.
Oh, Pavlov.
Or
Pavlov's
G.
Dog.
Stanley Hall. Yes, Pavlov's dog.
And it's something about hysteria?
It's something about hysteria. It is one of the original sources of studies on hysteria in women. I think it touches on the wandering womb. I'm not sure, I didn't find any quotes. But the title is A Brief Discourse of a Disease Called the Suffocation of the Mother.
It could be Freud, but also I know what you're like, and Freud could be a red herring. But Freud did write a lot about hysteria and write a lot about... Freud actually kind of accidentally wandered into being quite progressive. And, like, basically he, you know, kind of was one of the first people in the Western canon to, like, recognise the potential that, like, women's mental... quote-unquote mental health difficulties and quote-unquote hysteria might be, I don't know, as a result of like rampant sexual violence that happens early in life for women often.
I'm sure he didn't mean to.
You know, interestingly, he did. He wrote this and then slightly later in his career, he received a huge backlash from the kind of, you know, academic and psychiatric community that existed at the time and retracted a lot of what he said. So it's very possible that it's him for that reason, but that's, I'm not really sure. I also feel like it's a red herring.
Just,
I don't know the other two.
The other guy, the second one. Jordan something.
Jordan, Edward Jordan.
I go with Edward Jordan because I watch this film called Hysteria. It's a British film. You didn't watch it?
No.
Is this the one about not Freud, but Freud's like, what's his name?
It's a hysteria, but it's a rom-com. And I thought, well, it's a film about hysteria. There is a British guy in it. So I'm going with like an English sounding name.
I'm thinking about the film about Jung.
I don't know.
It's not but a period drama with... Is it period drama?
I think it's period drama, but I think like what I'm trying to say is like it's like a guess based on a film that I watched.
Oh,
because
right,
it was a British film.
Nice.
I thought maybe I should go for an English sounding name. That's my answer.
Because of misery.
Edward Jordan is British. And he's the right answer.
I'm going to add the link to the film.
Yeah. Edward Jordan lived... So the book was written around the witch trials in England.
Oh.
And the reason why he wrote the book was he was trying to be helpful. He was trying to argue that actually women aren't being like devil spawns and witches, but that they have a disease of the mind caused by their wandering wombs and their uteruses that are floating inside their bodies, causing them to have hysterics. But that they shouldn't actually be put to death. It was
this
very
was progressive for its time.
So progressive.
Just haunted by their own bodies.
He was such a nice guy, really. He was just a little dude trying to be helpful.
He was just a little guy.
Oh, and he missed the fact that actually was just misogyny that killed women.
Yeah, well, you know. Like... I know. And then the fourth guy, G. Stanley Hall, he was the birth father of eugenics, the like bulk. All of that stuff, all of that lovely, lovely, lovely
naughty
stuff.
Boy.
Yeah, indeed. Yes. So, yeah, I thought that was fun. Okay, in ancient Russia, India, and Japan, it was believed that vaginas were devil's tools used by women to control men's minds.
Oh, I thought it was true.
Vaginas sapped the energy from women's bodies, making them incapable of retaining information or studying. Women could communicate subliminally through their vaginas, or vaginas had teeth.
Oh my god, I love all
of
them.
Well, these are the options.
These are the options.
I thought this was a really long question.
So vaginas are devil's tools.
Devil's
tools. To control men. Vaginas make you incapable of studying.
Telepathic.
Yeah, women can communicate telepathically through their vaginas, or vaginas have teeth.
I've already forgotten
the first one.
Devil's tools to control men.
Mm-hmm.
Telepathic communication between us, we can do.
Yeah. Let's just not talk for the rest of the podcast and just communicate telepathically.
I'm going to say that does have to be our actual recording. Yeah, our podcast
today. We don't have a microphone here.
Yeah.
Devil's tools, telepathic vagina.
Teeth. It make you incapable of studying or teeth.
Incapable of studying. I feel like either devil's tools are capable of studying.
I like the idea about like evil.
I know there's the vagina.
So I'm going for that.
Is it vagina dentata or something like that? That is a thing, but.
Vagina dentata. It makes sense because we will say that in Italian.
There you go. That's
yeah, that dente, teeth.
Latin root. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Latin.
Ah, unites us all. Is there much of a Latin root in Bulgarian?
No. Zero.
Oh, well. How do you say teeth in Bulgarian?
Zibi.
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 Love that.
Is that what you were guessing?
No. I think devil's tools.
Devil's tools?
Mm-hmm.
Devil's tools. Mm-hmm. It is, in fact, vagina dentata.
No.
Yeah.
But how would they say that? I mean, clearly this man...
Difficult to do.
They never had intercourse with a woman to make up.
I think it's...
You know what I mean? I'm not understanding.
The women can use the teeth, but they don't always.
And
flossing is really hard.
Okay.
So really what they were discovering were dermoid cysts, which when fully developed can resemble teeth.
I want one. I want some of them.
I want those. I don't.
That's the kind of bejazzling I can get on board with.
Yeah.
Look at my smile.
I want braces on my vagina
smile
teeth.
For the camera.
Sparkly dentures.
So in the 1920s, Dr. Belaschik developed the term menotoxin, as well as the theory that women's periods were poisonous with this menotoxin. What happened to make him think that? So he was convinced that women's menstrual blood was poisoning them and causing their PMS. His wife washed his clothes and her period-stained garments all at the same time, and then he developed bronchitis and was convinced that he developed bronchitis because of menstrual blood.
Oh.
Because of cross-contamination. His assistant placed flowers in a vase in his office while on her period. The flowers died, and he attributed this to the effects of menstrual blood. Or he traveled to Nepal, where women and girls are kept separate from work and school during their periods to avoid contamination, and that prompted him to study where that theory was coming from.
These are all very plausible.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I will say flowers.
Yeah, that sounded only because you kind of smirked.
Which is very funny.
I just think that, you know, men come up with theories about women's body very randomly.
Yeah.
I mean, going on a trip to Nepal, it sounds like a lot of like exertion happening there. Mm. But if that happened, kudos to this person.
I'm gonna go with flowers as well.
I'm just gonna throw a curveball and I'm gonna say the trip to Nepal.
So the trip to Nepal, the Nepal statement is correct. In Nepal, women and girls are kept separate during their periods out of fear of cross-contamination and disease spreading and whatever, and the demonness of menstrual blood. But the real answer is the flowers.
Woo-hoo!
It's so weird. She didn't even bleed on the flowers. I don't understand. I'm like, what is wrong with, like, the fact that she was on her period and she touched some flowers... And then they died.
They were dead because they were chopped.
Because they were chopped
and they were going to die.
And they were.
Think about if she touched him on her period.
I'm
based on that theory, he could have died.
What?
If only that were true.
Oh my God, what a power.
who allows you to walk outside of your flat in the morning?
Oh.
Let alone give you a degree? I'm so confused by this person.
This is the 20s, though. He was probably on cocaine.
Yeah, it's true. Yes,
they were all true.
Yeah. I was expecting that. I thought you were justifying man in the 20s, but no, you basically blame it on drugs.
No impulse control when you're off your face on cocaine.
And then our final question is that back in the olden days, it was believed that menstruation in women leads to senility. Like being insane.
Oh, right. Okay.
Like being senile.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, right.
Right.
flat breasts, poor posture, or demon possession?
What was the question? I forget.
Masturbation in women.
All right.
So masturbation can make you go senile, have flat breasts, poor posture, or demon possession.
Senile.
I'm between that and demon possession. Yeah. Because I think it's...
What year are we
I just about? Like it.
Demon possession.
Yeah.
I'm going to find this out. But the right answer is flat breasts.
What?
It's so weird. It's so weird. The thing that kept on surprising me throughout all of the research that I did, generously saying research for this episode, is how it was always the stupidest answer. Every single time, flat breasts, or touching a flower, or it's just, it's so bizarre.
Like, all I do when I'm at home. All I do. Clearly. I'm practically concave.
I'm thinking about it because of hormones, like my body shape changed, but I would have had exactly the same. What were you doing?
1848.
You could, like, iron your shirt on me. Somebody needs to, like, put mittens on me, clearly.
1848. Masturbation leads to flat breasts.
1848.
Yeah.
What was happening in the world at that time that made people think
opium.
That way?
Yes. Pre-cocaine.
In 1848, a physician named François Lallemand published a book called Practical Treatise
Men
on the
are
Causes
in charge
and Symptoms
of Everything is the answer.
And Treatment so of... Spermatorrhea.
Oh, wait a second. Spermatorrhea?
I don't know.
It's like
I haven't read the book. According to him, men who masturbated would be left with the nerves wasted and depleted. The entire nervous system will eventually become shattered and ruined beyond all hope of complete recovery for men. And then girls who masturbated usually showed strong indications in the failure of their glandular development. Such persons are apt to be flat-breasted, or as we term it, flat-chested.
Is that what we mean by glands?
Yeah, glands. Breastual glands. Breastual is not a word, but I'm making it one.
I have so many things to say, but there is no time.